Okay, I thought we'd do it a little reverse, and I was going to just read a little from the Bhagavad-gita as a little inspiration. Bhagavatam's inspiration, this is also the essence of inspiration, and particularly, often talk about going back to Godhead. So, Sanatana Goswami gives a detailed description of what it means to go back to Godhead. And here, the setting is actually that Gopa Kumar is actually in Dwarka. And Narada Muni suggests that he go to, this is in the spiritual world, Dwarka, and he suggests that he goes to Purushottam Kshetra, but Uddhava says no, better he just comes back to earth, to Vrindavan here. And the discussion which preceded this, which was very interesting and important, was that they are talking about the one overriding qualification for attaining Braj. And this was already, of course, that Gopakumar was already an extraordinary devotee, and he already possessed love. And of course, he'd already seen Krishna in different forms, and that was humility, but a very special type of humility, without which you can't go to Vrindavan. And so, I'll just read the end of this chapter, it's very interesting. So Uddhava is telling him, he said, if you're going anywhere else, the proper thing would be to take permission from the Lord. But that land, namely Vrindavan, is most dear to him. Not even by direct service to the Lord here in Dwarka does love arise that firmly develops if one merely lives in the land of Braj. In other words, you can't attain the same result of being in Dwarka as you can by living in Vrindavan. He says, therefore, I spent a long time in Brajabhumi, because Uddhava was there for 8 months, on the pretext of consoling those dear devotees who live there with nothing left but their lives. I'm sure my Lord already knows of your powerful desire, so he'll personally bring you his dear friend to his dearest abode. This is the interesting part. And he says, he'll personally bring you there. So Gopakumar said, and he's talking to his disciple, he says, filled with the highest ecstasy from drinking the immortal nectar of Uddhava's words, I seem to lose consciousness. There in Dwarka, for a moment, I closed my eyes. Sensing that someone had taken me elsewhere, I then opened my eyes, and I saw that I had been brought to this grove. This is here in Vrindavan, where he's actually meeting with this Kamatha Brahmana. And in the commentary, Sanatana Goswami says, with his eyes closed, Gopakumar couldn't see who was carrying him. Had he seen that it was Krishna taking him to earth to leave him in Golokula, he would have never been able to give up the company of the Lord in Dwarka. So Krishna carried him. Krishna personally brought him from spiritual world back to earth. And then the next chapter starts. So now he's in this grove. Following Narada's instructions here in Braj, I went to see the many places of Krishna's pastimes. In other words, he did parikrama. I sang his names most dear to me. I sang about his pastimes loudly and sweetly. I focused my mind upon them and attained such a state of ecstasy and became so emotional that it embarrasses me even to think of it. How then can I describe this to anyone? I spent my days and nights in great distress, always crying in a pitiful voice, not knowing whether the practice I had so long been following would lead me to happiness or cast me into an ocean of distress. I couldn't tell whether I was living in the flames of a forest fire or in the supreme nectar of the clear, cool waters of Sri Jamuna. This was the influence or the effect of what we call developing love for God. We talk about it, and Sanatana Goswami is explaining it a little. Sometimes I thought I had fallen into the hands of some great deceiver. I was always submerged in a vast ocean of misery. Not even a drop of happiness ever touched me. In such a way, just in case you have this idea that love of God is just some state of eternal euphoria. In such a way, I lived in this grove, this most attractive ornament of Vrindavan, and one day, while immersed in an ocean of weeping, I fell unconscious. Then, the crest jewel of all who are merciful appeared before me, with his own lotus hand, a hand cool like nectar, and always pleased to hold his flute, he wiped the dust from his limbs. So then Krishna finally appeared to him. This is the first time he actually gets darshan, although he's seen every other form of Krishna, he's never seen actually Shyamasundara. It wasn't easy, but that greatest of cheats playfully stirred me back to consciousness by filling my nostril with his unique heady fragrances, which I had never known before. And I'm skipping Sanatana Goswami's commentaries, because then we'll be able to get there. Then seeing his lotus face, I quickly stood up. Not knowing what I was doing, my heart filled with joy, I tried to catch hold of his splendid yellow cloth. So he finally saw Krishna and tried to catch him. That king of charming heroes blew his flute in his own playful way and escaped behind me. Suddenly he stepped into a grove, and alas, although I ran about looking, I couldn't find him. So he saw Krishna, and then Krishna disappeared. He had disappeared. Unable to see him, I fainted and fell into the swift current of the Jamuna. And as it forcefully carried me away, I seemed to regain normal awareness and looked around. So then he fell into the river, and the river just carried him away. But then, he says, I saw myself being transported to another place along some wonderful path by a vehicle flying faster than the mind and higher than one could imagine. Collecting my wits, I was amazed to see I was passing through Vaikuntha Loka, he was seeing all the planets, and going beyond, I watched with great delight as I passed Ayodhya and other realms, like Dwarka and Purushottam. I arrived at the shining world above all others, Sri Goloka, which I had long aspired to reach. This is called going back to God. Everything there appeared the same as in this divine Mathura Mandala of the material world. There, the same as here. It's a little different than here. You could imagine this was here like 500 years ago. In that original land of Mathura, I visited Mathura city. I was surprised and happy to see that it resembled Mathura here on earth. In that original Mathura, I heard that Kamsa had taken it upon himself to arrest his father and Krishna's parents, Devaki and Vasudev, and was ruling the kingdom. So same thing you're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kamsa is taking over Mathura in the spiritual world. Out of fear of Kamsa, whose family and friends were enemies of the demigods, the Yadavas dared not enjoy themselves freely. Because of him, they constantly suffered all sorts of affliction. Some of the Yadavas escaped elsewhere, and others took shelter of him. I too was afraid of Kamsa, so as soon as I finished bathing at Vishranga, I hurriedly left Mathura and went to glorious Vrindavan. So just 12 kilometers and he just went to Vrindavan. In that realm, beyond the reach of the demigods, planetary rulers, and personal attendants of the Supreme Lord, I saw that life was going on, just as here in this Aryavrata country in Bharatvarsha on earth. The sun was rising, and other natural events were taking place every day in the sky. And on the land, the people were speaking and behaving in the same way as here. I was stunned by astonishment, extreme astonishment, and immersed in an ocean of ecstatic rasa. After a few moments, I saw some men who might have been cowherds wandering in the forest with some ladies advanced in years and also wearing cowherd dress who were picking flowers. These were older cowherd men and gopis. The people there were different from anyone I had ever seen. Someone, it appeared, had stolen the wealth of their hearts and left them helplessly in love with him. Simply by seeing them, I felt the same kind of loving affection. Trying hard, I composed myself and respectfully asked him the following question. So he saw these gopas and gopis, and they were like wandering around like zombies. So as if someone had actually stolen their minds. And just by seeing them, Gopakumar became very much overwhelmed with love. So he asked, "O good people, you are served by a happiness so vast that the greatest sages can't obtain it even in dreams. You're the reservoirs of the mercy of the Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune, mercy for which his loving devotees always pray. Please, please look with kindness upon this most wretched person who's come to you for shelter. Tell me, who is the king of this region? Where is his residence? Which road leads there?" So he keeps asking them questions. I'm just moving on. "In this way, I moved here and there, anxiously questioning each person I met. And as I made my way forward, I came to the pasturing grounds of the cowherds." As he keeps asking them questions because they just ignore him. They don't respond to him. "Looking around in all directions, I spotted in the distance a town adorned with the essence of all sweetness. On one side of the town, all about, I heard wonderful songs sung by cowherd women and the charming sound of the churning butter and the jingling of bangles. Trying to subdue my agitated joy, I walked forward and came across a seated elderly gentleman sobbing profusely." So he came across an old cowherd man who was sitting there incessantly chanting Krishna, Krishna. "With some skillful effort, I made him speak, and I heard him say in a choked voice that this town belonged to Nanda, the king of the cowherds, Sri Krishna's father. As soon as I heard these words, I fainted, overcome with delight. After a moment, that compassionate old man revived me, and I ran ahead and approached the gateway of the town and sat there in the gate." So he saw this is underground, and then he ran there, he went to the gate, and then he sat down. "And there I saw by the hundreds of thousands and tens of millions all sorts of wonders, unseen, unheard of, unimaginable by anyone of this world. O best of Brahmins, I couldn't discern whether the people there were all enjoying the highest bliss or suffering in the grip of a terrible misery. I heard the gopis' songs coupled with their crying, but were they the songs of greatest contentment or the greatest sorrow? I couldn't tell. A person seeing that place might think he was in the material world. But by carefully reflecting on whatever he had seen before, he would understand he was now somewhere above all material planets, all higher non-planetary regions, and all the transcendental realms of the spiritual world. So it looks just like the material world, but if you start to analyze it, then you start to see that it's beyond Vaikuntha, or to speak of any other place. Then an elderly lady came by. I bowed down to her and asked in a plaintive voice where Sri Nandanandan was playing today. The elderly lady said, "This morning that giver of life to us, Vrijavasis, went into the dense forest to play with his cows and friends and his respected elder brother. Later at dusk he will return. All the Vrijavasis are waiting on this path along the Yamuna, their eyes transfixed on the road. These trees stand with leaves erect, eagerly awaiting the chance to see him. Surely he will come along this path." Sri Gopkumar said, "As if anointed by a downpour of the purest nectar, I gazed with one-pointed attention down the path the old lady had pointed out. The sheer force of my ecstasy had frozen my thighs, but with some effort I moved on, and I heard from afar a certain sound. Mixed with the mooing of cows, it was the supremely attractive murmur of Krishna's enchanting flute. That sound, sweet melodies of sportingly played notes, diverse with musical embellishments, was like nothing ever heard in the material world. Its attractive force at once overwhelmed everyone in the cowherd village."